So, Catherine, we want to use the spotlight view as well. So, an opening reflection from the lineage of our teachers who have gone before us and opened the door and shown us the way. So, in addition to their vast knowledge, by virtue of their being, they have released a great deal of energy into the world and directly to us personally, and we owe them a great deal. So tonight, I'm especially pleased to draw from our closest teacher and wayshore, Tim Cook, who is the co-founder of the Church of Conscious Harmony and whose birthday is Saturday, January 22nd. And we can listen to the timeliness of his message, and then I will tell you when he actually wrote it. The seasons are right. The forces are all aligned. The course of history has brought us to a crisis moment when it's actually conceivable that things may not go forward as we think they will. We are at a turning point in an epoch and in a way of life. But we don't need to become supermen. We need to become godmen and women. Godmen and women who have abandoned themselves and taken the big chance, put themselves on the line and let the subconscious come up and then hand it all over to God. Fall back into the context and through Christ as the mediator, bear the human experience in whatever way that it appears. Bear it in the Father's love. Bear the other in the Father's love. And the love will heal us all. So timely, yes. It was written in 2007. How prescient it was. This work allows us to play our part while our center of gravity is firmly attuned to the vertical scale of being, while being fully and participating fully in life. We're not here to negate it or escape it. We are here to realize who we are and act from it. And may it be so for us. And happy birthday, dear Tim. What a great blessing you are to us and to the world. So just a couple of notes. There's still an opportunity to participate in a journey group, even though the options are becoming fewer and fewer, to have a work partner and to become an oblate, which would provide an even deeper experience of a vowed life lived by a rule in community with others. A reminder, however, that these selections need to be made, these deeper selections, and registered for by January 31st. Also, if you are new to the work, you may want to sign up for the Introduction to the Work class, which will run 6 weeks in parallel to this class on Wednesday evenings, starting this next Wednesday evening, January 26th. And you can find out more and register by going on the church's website. So now we prepare to enter our being into Lectio Divina and the evening. And we come from our busy lives, perhaps from the workplace. And we do bring our being. What each of us brings matters. How we come matters. How we participate matters, for that is what we are emanating in and through this body, this microcosm of the great megalocosmos what we are emanating matters to all of us. So we place ourselves, center ourselves in a place of imminent trust and receptivity to the influence pouring forth from the conscious circle of humanity. And we prepare to receive these influences and take them in with high valuation. So with back upright and heart open, mind quiet and directed attention, body relaxed, letting go of all tension, restriction. Open now. We breathe. We breathe in deeply from almost hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that has passed through us this day. Everything that may have hurt, confused, prompted fear, that left us powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy, all affirming, all denying, we carry it, hold it as offering, reconciling, as food for being. We lift it and ask that it all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing love into the world, all worlds. We hand over the complexities of this day, the plans for tomorrow, the anxieties and small fears of our hearts. We yield to the divine human life that is ours. We are here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand in unencumbered before God and before you, one another. Lord, have mercy. We will do our reading in the manner of Lectio Divina, reading our passage three times with a silent pause in between each reading. Amen, amen, I say to you, what is born of flesh is flesh, and what is born of spirit is spirit. Do not be amazed that I told you, you must be born from above. All work on oneself consists in choosing the influence to which you wish to subject yourself and actually falling under this influence. Bear in mind that these worlds are actual spheres of causality. This ray of being that suggests that the human person, though not by any means the center of the universe, was created to play a special role in the transformation of itself, as well as all matter within our own cosmos and the ones above and below. When we see ourselves as part of a larger whole, we act on behalf of the whole. Finding ourselves in deep communion with the whole Earth community is integral to Christogenic life and a new basis for ethics. We are transformers of molecules and of meaning in equal measure. Amen, amen, I say to you. What is born of flesh is flesh, and what is born of spirit is spirit. Do not be amazed that I told you you must be born from above. All work on oneself consists in choosing the influence to which you wish to subject yourself, and actually falling under this influence. Bear in mind that these worlds are actual spheres of causality. This ray of being suggests that the human person, though not by any means the center of the universe, was created to play a special role in the transformation of itself, as well as all matter within our own cosmos and the ones above and below. When we see ourselves as part of a larger whole, we act on behalf of the whole. Finding ourselves in deep communion with the whole Earth community is integral to Christogenic life and a new basis for ethics. We are transformers of molecules and of meaning in equal measure. Amen, amen, I say to you. What is born of flesh is flesh, and what is born of spirit is spirit. Do not be amazed that I told you you must be born from above. All work on oneself consists in choosing the influence to which you wish to subject yourself, and actually falling under this influence. Bear in mind that these worlds are actual spheres of causality. This ray of being suggests that the human person, though not by any means the center of the universe, was created to play a special role in the transformation of itself, as well as all matter within our own cosmos and the ones above and below. When we see ourselves as part of a larger whole, we act on behalf of the whole, finding ourselves in deep communion with the whole Earth community is integral to Christogenic life and a new basis for ethics. We are transformers of molecules and of meaning in equal measure. And so it is. I now invite you to share what it is that you received from this passage. And you may share by indicating your raised hand and the symbols, and then you will be called upon. Steve.
Well, this passage, especially about by no means the center of the universe, but an important creation to advance the universe or in the general grand plan. I brought out my old, the Journey to the Center of the Universe, the View from the Center of the Universe, and it's Primack and Abrams, and they recounted this thing called the Midgard. And it's in the Ouroboros with the snake swallowing its tail. And if you map out the range of size of creation from the smallest molecules to the largest superclusters, mankind or humankind is in the center, is the center of that size range. And we have to be a certain size from Yoda to, you know, Kevin Durant. We sit in that size range, but we couldn't be much smaller to have the complexity of organ systems that could work. So we're in this size range. It's right smack dab in the middle. And we also have this self-reflection that we can study the skies. And I don't want to get ahead of ourselves in the homework and the view in the video, but these discoveries keep happening as space is hurtling in ever widening spheres, and we're discovering in more ways and being bombarded with this information and have to readjust to it. So yeah, we're at a very unique position to be full of wonder. Oh, just wow. Yes. This whole thing. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Steve. How wonderful. How glorious. Alan.
I heard the words, when we see ourselves as part of the whole, we act in behalf of the whole. I saw that as a testament to understanding. Because when we see ourselves as part of the whole, when we understand ourselves as part of the whole, we understand that what we do, if we're kind or unkind, it affects the others and ourselves. And once you understand that, in all three centers, it's not just an idea, but a feeling, you know, you understand that it's all connected.
Indeed. Yes. Thank you so much, Alan.
Thank you.
Victoria, please.
I like the humility that's encouraged. I was reading a book and it showed this data that humans perceive less than 10% of what's able to be perceived. And I thought about that a long time. And so I think that it's a good idea to get out of our intellect sometimes and not take our thinking so seriously. And I think to explore spiritually gets us beyond the limitations of senses. I like Dr. Thomas Hora. He's passed away, but he was a great spiritual leader, psychiatrist who moved from Europe to New York. And he would often say, I studied with one of his students, he would often say, what is the meaning of what seems to be? And I don't know why, but this reading seemed to move me in that direction. I do believe that we all are, I think we're all connected, but also don't think we're separate. I mean, in the sense that sometimes we think in our human way that we are separate entities and then we're connected, but I almost spiritually sense that we are all just one. And so anyway, it stimulated it was a stimulating reading. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Victoria. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mimi, good evening.
Good evening, everyone. I was really moved by the art. And I was first drawn by the ladder and the humans on the ladder. And from the top, there's a hand reaching in. Mm-hmm. And all of the hands, so many of the hands are painted in. It's hard to see some of them, but everyone is touching the next person. And the heavenly hosts are here. And then maybe the ones of us that might forget for a moment or forget for a time might be the ones that are kind of hanging on, but with not a lot of hope with all those like scary guys down there. But the biggest part of this for me was that I have to move, I have to grow, I have to evolve, or I stop everybody. I'm in the way. So that shows the part of us that serves humanity and serves the greater good. That even though I might not want to work right now, I can work. And so I was very moved by that painting. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much.
And thank you, Mimi. What a blessing to ponder mm-hmm. that painting and your thoughts. And Billy and or Brad, we will close this particular segment of time with one or both of you.
It's me. Choosing your influence and actually coming under the authority of it, or under it. I don't think it said authority. I find the first part of that a lot easier to do than the second part. It's a lot easier to choose, it seems to me, than it is to actually allow it to enter me for more than that split second. I can choose to go do my sit instead of watch the 6 o'clock news, for example. However, during that sit, if my phone beeps at me because I use it as a timer, it seems almost impossible not to look at it. So it's it's staying, it's allowing that influence to really go a lot deeper than I initially think. If that makes sense. I don't know.
It does. Amen. Thank you, Billy. Thank you. Well, thank you to everyone who shared, and for all of us as we have pondered and listened to these same words together. We take it with us in our being. And now it is my joy and pleasure to again welcome Brian Graham, who will speak to us of our place, our calling, our responsibility in the great ray of creation. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you. Thanks everyone who shared. It really is food. It's just really enlivening to hear. Why don't we start with homework, or questions or comments about the homework from last week? Would anyone like to share your impression of the video, Steve?
Yeah, well, this is fascinating. The video kind of leaves off where this great attractor is sucking all these supercluster galaxies into itself, and it's like a season ender. It's like you're in suspense. Will we get swallowed up? Will our galaxy collide with all the other galaxies and blow up? What will happen? And there was some other subsequent videos that said that there's other things that are having forces, gravitational forces. And so they have all these names for these things, but there's out the great attractors on the other side of this zone of avoidance. How they name these things is amazing. So the zone of your great attractors behind the zone of avoidance, and that fit with personality, but they discovered that they could look around that, and they found the shapely attractor or supercluster. And then there's an even bigger one, the Vela supercluster that this lady in New Zealand discovered. And so it seems like every minute you turn around, there's a new discovery. You're looking around another bend, and then you see more mileage ahead, more light years ahead, and it's hopelessly big. And so that's why, these things are hurtling around in space at incredible speeds, and we feel like we're standing still. I think we just concentrate on our center of gravity and think about it from there. But it's fascinating. You could get really lost in it, the size of it. But the other thing I'm struck with is this whole thing that you discussed last week, and that is the similitudes of whole that Gurdjieff talks about, that everything is, or like Wilbur, Ken Wilbur, the holons, is that everything reflects everything else, all the way down to us, our brain cells, the universe. And it's comforting to me to know that whatever intelligence is out there, the source, it kind of makes things the same way. It's always the same. I mean, it's the same substrate, and that's of atoms, molecules, and the way it's designed. That's, yeah. So thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, it's like you. How do they come up with those names? The great attractor is such an intriguing name. Any other comments? Tracy, please.
Hi.
Hi.
I saw that video a few years ago, and I watched it again. And for me, feeling at home on this planet, it's kind of been something I've always searched for. And when I saw that video and where we are in position to the supercluster, I have never felt such a sense of home. Like, oh my God, this so makes sense to me. Finally, I am home. It really touched me profoundly. I used to watch it every day when I first found it years ago. So and that's one thing. The other thing in the homework that I did was I worked on that scale exercise where I tried to differentiate the difference between like being out in the night sky and feeling the stars and the moon. Oh, it was beautiful. And then the scale of that same cosmos that must be in the molecules that are in our hand. And it was much easier for me to connect and feel expansive in the one in the sky. It was a little more difficult for me to connect in the one in the hand, but I happened to yesterday finally make myself put a rock in my hand, like it suggested, and just feel the rock. And I was brought to tears it was just a little rock. It wasn't any special rock. I just happened to pick it up off the ground. It was a pebble. But I was brought to tears by the beauty of that rock and the connection I felt with this rock. And how in vibration, in a way, I am with that. My body is with that rock, which just surprised me. And it was certainly an exercise in the work to try to notice why I had put that off for an entire week to look at a rock. I thought that was kind of interesting too. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Kelly.
Oh, hi, it's Cammy.
Oh, Cammy.
Yeah, hi, thank you. For me, the homework suggestion on being present to posture was really, I have such a powerful connection to spirit in the body. I teach a movement meditation class, and last week's and this week's content was just a blessing to work with. In playing with sensing into the body, this ray of light moving in both directions. So the groundedness and the work that we do in our embodied experience, and then the opening up to the light of the divine, and then the invitation to pray without ceasing, that it's just always why being awake is so important, because this is an ongoing discernment as we move through life in moments. Is it more important for me to tune in and be grounded and present physically? And how can I invite spirit into this? And it's just so unpredictable, so dynamic, and requires just so much presence to have a heart open to the movement both directions.
Thank you, Cammy. My eyes, the glasses are not as great as I think they are. Bob, please.
Well, I watched the video for the first time, and it reminded me of that statement from, I think it was probably from the Lao Tzu from wonder to wonder, existence opens. And it just seemed like such an immensity, something beyond the human. So one part of me said, well, gee whiz, what's going to happen to me? But then I realized, no, that doesn't really matter. And that the immensity of what we're involved in is so much more wondrous and beautiful than anything that we would have ever imagined. And now science is finding out how that actually looks, and technology with a a video like that is kind of revealing, it's hinting to us from a higher world, from a world 24, of what this symbolically could feel like and look like that transcends the human. And so in a sense, it is frightening because it's so much beyond our normal plane, but it's also wondrous and beautiful. And I thought that it was encouraging because, you know, those of us who've been in various religious spiritual trips along the way in our spiritual journey with different teachers and practices, we can look at it and say it's so much further beyond anything that we could, you know, worship or pray to or, you know, be graced by, that we're a part of, that it is really, you know, it's, you can't choose it. It's beyond choice. It's just the way it is. And so I found the whole thing fascinating. And the fact that we're at the church going into it through the Gurdjieff work and saying, well, how did that make sense? And what resonance is there in mathematics? I think it's an exciting way to embody this idea of, well, it always seemed to me that spirit was something that was kind of airy fairy and woo woo and misty and mystical. I'm starting to realize that no, it all comes down to, you know, matters and quarks and molecules and, you know, basic physicality of things, the embodiment of things in human beings. And that's really what matters. So anyway, I'll zip the lip. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I resonate with that too, that it seems fantastical in some ways until it gets grounded in the reality of what's actually happening at the subatomic level, and then this image that our CGI, computer technology, mathematics is giving us, this image of something we've never been able to see before. And that's, the deeper we peer in both directions, it no longer seems fantastical. It just seems extraordinary that we live in this reality. Deborah Jean, please.
Hi, Brian. Thanks, Bob. Woo-hoo! That's all I have to say about that. I spent a lot of time with my rock, which I have here. Being a seven, I had four rocks, and of course, you know, more is better, but I finally settled on this one that came from the bottom of the canyon in Palo Duro that had been worn by the river there and looked a little bit like a human brain, maybe with a piece missing, which is what I feel like my brain is doing these days, and also like a piece of the moon because it had the craters in it, and it has some mineral salt deposits in it. It just felt good because of the time working on it, of the time like our spiritual journey works on us. And I really hooked into the whole idea of I forget whether it was Cynthia's writing or Nicole's writing that we had this week in the email, but about the idea of Earth as a being. And that's what really struck me. And it's been striking me all year. As my body is kind of leaving. And I told Peter one day, I'm not really going to die. I'm just going to evaporate. That's what it feels like. I'm getting tinier and tinier. And it's harder and harder for me to do something like eat meat. Or even when I'm eating vegetables, I'm thinking, did this hurt the vegetable it's that feeling of that connection and being aware of my own pain at this point. The connection with others and their suffering. And when the fires hit Australia, I spent a lot of time up in the Koala Reserve some years back, and I thought of all those beautiful animals. That's my spirit animal, is the koala, because she's a ferocious mother. And so that's my spirit animal. And those sweet beings and in that fire, and just wept and wept. And so a lot of my sadness is also joy at how we are connected. And that just like I think Mimi said, that my evolution and my transformation is critical to the transformation of the planet. It's not a thing I can do lightly. It's a thing that the planet depends on. Not that I'm responsible for saving the world. I gave that up a long time ago. But that I am a critical part of that transformation. And that connection to all of us in the ray of creation, that I am a child of this earth at this time, and that I can't expect to throw toxins on my mother and stuff a plastic bottle down her throat and then have her nurture me well. And that I have to, I really have to enliven my choices with that higher influence of what is good for all, because all is me. I'm a particle and I'm the wave too, just like all is connected. The last thing I wanted to share is, and I've shared this before, but it was a quote that my son gave me when I first got diagnosed. And I was having a lot of anxiety about the cancer and about dying and about all those things, kind of getting that news. And he sent me a quote that the author is unknown, but the quote says, you are a ghost driving a meat-covered skeleton made of stardust. What have you got to be afraid of? And the thing that hit me with that, it just stopped the anxiety, because what I realized was I am in this finite body. I don't have any trouble with the recognition now that I'm dying and that my body's dying. This body is dying. But there's these other bodies that we're talking about. And there's these, and there is the stardust, the molecular structure in this rock. It moves a lot slower than I do. Its heartbeat may be eons long, whereas my heartbeat may be, you know, 70 beats per minute. But it is alive just like I am, and made of that same stardust. And that recognition of that connection and the recognition of us all being in this together has just been profound for me. Thank you so much for all the sharing. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's really, just as things go, the perfect, feels like the perfect segue into tonight's topic, especially your moon rock. And as I tell the story of the ray of creation, that just, that image is just so beautiful. I think it's it says a lot. So the ray of creation is a work idea. It's really a central work idea. And for a long, long time, I didn't really bond with it too well. It just didn't connect for me. And I've heard a lot of people in journey groups and people make similar comments that, well, the ray of creation doesn't seem important to me. I don't get it. I don't see the relevance of it. It's just too complicated. And I really feel that. I resonate with that a lot. And I don't know exactly what happened. I don't know that I can explain what happened too clearly, but at some point, thinking about evolutionary Christianity, the ideas of Ilya Delio, Teilhard de Chardin, physicist David Bohm and others, just this whole different view came to light within me. And then Cynthia Bourgeau in Eye of the Heart, she explains the ray of creation, which is the downward movement, and the ray of evolution, which is the upward one. And she identified it as the first time I ever heard anyone say that Teilhard's evolutionary ray is what's being described there. And I thought about it and started to ponder that. And all of a sudden, the whole ray of creation felt like a story. Instead of diagrams and charts and numbers, I heard the story. And I think hearing the story brings back the relevance. Why is this the central idea of the work? If we're here to work on ourselves, why are we talking about this, you know, Laniakea and the moon and all of this? What's the relevance? So I'd like to tell the story tonight, as I understand it, of the ray of creation, but in a different way. So I'm only going to have one slide, and I only want to use it at the very beginning just to kind of show us the characters in this story, and then just turn off that video screen and just talk. So here's the slide. You can see on the right, this is a good diagram of the whole thing here. We have on the left, the arrow going down, which is the great ray. That's the ray of creation unfolding. And as it unfolds at each level, things get under more and more laws, or there's more and more constraints. You can think of it that way. And so you're just looking at the little lines connecting the little laws between the worlds. When you get down there at the bottom, it looks like just a solid black line. So many constraints. And down at the very bottom, the absolute nothing, it's also called holy nothing. There's nothing but constraint. Then going up is the ray of being. But we'll talk about that in a minute. That to me is the fun and beautiful story part of it. So the characters here in the great ray, these are all based on cosmological entities. So we have the holy absolute at the very, very top. This is the unmanifest, infinite potential, all possibilities, unlimited freedom. The great beyond, beyond the beyond. It's that absolute oneness of God. And then below that, we have what the work calls all worlds. I think of Laniakea as a representative of that. That's the all worlds for us, the immeasurable heaven. That's made up of galaxies. The Milky Way is our galaxy, our little tiny piece within Laniakea. Then we have our sun, tiny little component of the Milky Way. And then we have this thing called all planets, which I didn't understand so much before, but that's the solar system as an entity, kind of like an atom, where in the middle is the sun and those planets orbit around it. That whole thing as a system is beneath the sun. And we're a little piece of that system. So there we are. And below that is the moon orbiting around us. Below that is this holy nothing, which I think of as dark matter. Apparently something like 80% of the universe, we think, is this mysterious substance called dark matter, which does not respond to light. I think that's fascinating. So those are the characters going from the top down to the bottom. The ray of evolution is the story of what happens from the bottom to the top. So at the bottom, we have holy nothing. It's holy. It's incapable of receiving any light at all. This is sometimes called, besides dark matter, it's called the outer darkness. Cynthia Bourgeau says this is where the hell realms are. In different religious traditions, different spiritual teachings, this outer darkness, the void, the place of absolutely no consciousness. So this is essentially a story of light. There's no light at all that can reach dark matter. Nothing gets in here. But it's a story of transformation. It's a story of transcendence. And so somehow little pieces of this seemingly dead, cold matter, there's a piece of it like that rock that drifts away and it gets caught in the orbit of something greater than itself. The moon ends up caught in the orbit of this beautiful blue planet, our home, and it's got a better life. It's at a higher level of being. It's got a new future. This is the world of reflected light, which is what the moon is showing us. The moon is now in position to receive light from our sun. But it doesn't actually go into the moon, it just bounces off. So nothing gets into the moon itself, it's reflected off. The moon is also moving now, it's not completely trapped, it's orbiting around something else. It's dependent on the Earth for that orbit. But it also gives something to us. It creates the tidal patterns. that rhythm of the earth is coming from this moon in its evolution. It's got a new job. It's got this new purpose. So in our consciousness, this is the lowest level of human consciousness. It's not bad or good. None of this is bad or good. It's just under more laws, under fewer laws. And at this very low level of consciousness, the light isn't getting in. The light's coming to us. It's faithfully coming to the level of the moon. It's just bouncing off. And so consciousness inside that level, there's no God in there. There's no awareness of light. And this results in all the different negative emotions that we experience, from shame at the very bottom of the barrel, all the way up to pride. These, what we call negative or negative emotions, are the ones where there's no real sense of the light. This includes what we call formatory thought in the work. It includes opinions, stereotypes, mythic membership, things like politics, sports, all of it. This level is not bad or good. It's just under the most laws, the furthest away from the light. And we all have it. That's one of the other things where work reminds us, we're not a fixed entity. We're not some single I. We go up, we go down, we go back, we go forth. All these levels are within us. For myself, you know, it's as mundane as I won't buy anything online without looking at other people's opinions. What did the reviews say? Is it 4 stars? Okay, I'll buy it. Is it 3.9? No way. It's that dependence on these types of formatory thought. It's also the thing that we see the other people doing. Those other people who listen to the news and just repeat back mechanically what they're hearing on the news. We see it in the other people. We don't see it in ourselves. But that's this world of the moon. Not good or bad. It's risen from its lowlier station there in world 192, and it's now available to the light. The next level up from that is world 48, our Earth. That's the note me. It's the me, the place of me. It's the normal set point for human beings. And here, just like the Earth, there's the capacity to receive light. The whole film of organic life receives light. Plants, animals, the ocean, everything receiving light and using it in some way. So this is a higher level of consciousness. It's a higher level of relationship to the light. Now there's a capacity to receive it. And this is true for us as well. We have this, what's called self-reflective consciousness. And it never occurred to me, thinking about the moon can't self-reflect. It just bounces it right straight back. But we have this capacity to receive the light and direct it. But we're just not very good at it. And hidden in the creation story in Genesis, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there that seems like it was added on, but that story was an oral tradition, apparently for centuries before it came to be written and included in the Old Testament. And so pieces of it sound like they're pointing to this same idea. In Genesis 3:7-8, it says, then it seems to be describing, first of all, this moment when humans became self-reflective. We suddenly, our eyes are open to receive the light. We have this ability that we didn't have before. And scripture says, then their eyes were opened and they suddenly felt shame at their nakedness and they hid themselves from the Lord among the trees of the garden. And I reflected on that and I heard the self-reflective consciousness. Here we go. We get it. We have it. We look at ourselves and we see something wrong. Something doesn't seem right. And we plummet all the way down to shame, which is the lowest emotion at world 96. So we kind of plummet in our being and drop. That happens at world 48. But there's a lot more here. There's also a lot of positive emotions, actually. This is the level of organic life. It's the level of the good householder. The work talks about good householder. It includes also these consciousness levels of courage, neutrality, willingness, acceptance, and reason. All of them are here in world 48. And so we have this wide range of being. You can feel it in yourself. We can all feel that. We have these negative emotions, all this stuff going on, but we also can feel courage, acceptance, willingness, reason. And those are all the qualities of good householder. So from here, from level 48, we not only have the capacity to receive light, but if we can look at ourselves and not go into that self-critic, not go into shame and these negative feelings, and stay at 48 at the level of good householder, then we can receive that light and continue in our upward evolution. The level above is interestingly exactly like the image. So thinking about the solar system, the interior of the solar system is light. It's the sun in the very middle, and swirling around on the outside are these planets. World 24, as Cynthia tells us, has been called the kingdom of heaven or the realm of inner light. So just like the solar system, this is the realm of unitive consciousness, of a sense of within us of the light. We carry it within. And it's the imaginal realm, the realm of presence, of love, of joy, of delight. It's the level of transformation of incoming impressions. Meaning, when we're doing self-observation, we're not trying to observe at the same level of being that's looking. I mean, we're not looking from the same level of being as what we're seeing, but from this more expansive space of world 24. World 24 also includes the knowledge of wholeness. Alan was talking about that earlier tonight, just knowing that there's wholeness, knowing that it looks like separation, but it's not. We're all connected, and us and all of reality. This is the kingdom of heaven. So when Jesus says it's at hand, he's not kidding. It's the floor right above world 48. And above that is the level of the sun as itself. This is the sun, S-O-N-S-U-N. This is the Christic world, according to Cynthia. The light of the world. At this level of consciousness, this is the level of fully incarnate love, fully embodied love. It's the level of the witness, what Teilhard calls the omega point, the fullness of life, the fullness of being a human is here. And it also includes the perception of light within matter, not just the knowledge of it, this perception of it. There was some sharing tonight, and I've read in the Mark and people sharing their stories, people talking in journey groups and personal experiences, these moments of being at this level of world 12, at this Christic level, just for peeping in there just for a moment and seeing shimmering light in all matter, seeing the aliveness within trees and rocks and creation, seeing the light emanating from what's around us. And even just short periods of time in that state can just totally transform, like kind of burn something inside. That's world 12. the sun, the light of the world. If you take the intelligence of that sun, it's obviously at a higher level. It's created the solar system, or at least its gravity is what's holding the solar system together. It's giving light to organic life on Earth, creating and fostering organic life, and it's shining on the moon. It's got a lot more going on than the other worlds we've discussed so far. And it's just a tiny, tiny piece of the next realm. And that's the galaxy, our Milky Way. So again, the actual visual seems to correspond exactly to the psychological state. If you're somewhere other than a big city, in the middle of the night, you look out at the stars at the Milky Way, it looks like a Milky band. It's a, more of a unity than the individual stars within it. World six is that unity. It's the realm of what's called the Logos, or the eternal light. This is the pure manifestation of matter and the end of duality. Even though duality kind of fades, it's really, really strong at World 96. If my football team doesn't do well, oh my gosh, you know, that sort of thing. But it recedes a bit, but there's still an observer and an observed, even as you go up this ray. At World 12, it's kind of sort of, you know, blended together. There's an experiencer, though, experiencing the light within matter. At World 6, there is no observer. There's no self. There's no distinction between matter and self. This is what Bernadette Roberts describes as the no self state, just a white screen type of thing. Cynthia says this is the maximal freedom for matter. Matter has pure potential here. There's nothing but matter at this level. But prior to matter, there's another world. And this is represented for us by Lani Achaea, that gigantic galactic cluster that we looked at last week. This is World 3, the Holy Trinity. And I found this really interesting. Cynthia was explaining, this is the law of world creation. That's all there is. So if you think of matter, all matter as being a world, behind that world are the rules that allow it to come into existence. Just like the outline for a story or the basic operating instructions for some program. Those basic operating instructions are here at World 3, the laws of world creation. This is consciousness itself, according to the various people talking about it, Cynthia and others. This is pure consciousness, which is prior to matter at this very edge. So if that's the case, then Lani Achaea is an image, essentially, of that pure consciousness, the very purity, the most free entity in the whole universe. And beyond consciousness is the absolute, which is to say, no matter how conscious anyone gets, no matter how bigly we see, no matter how greatly we see, no matter how much we can experience, God is always beyond that, always infinitely unknowable and unknown. And yet, always pulling all of creation closer and closer and closer. And that ladder of ascent is such a beautiful old, old expression of this same idea. And it's got the markings of its time. There's little devil figures and little people in their people clothes going up the ladder to levels where you wouldn't, you know, can't really exist as a human, but nevertheless, it really captures so much beauty about the idea, like Mimi was sharing. And this idea, this notion of ascent, is deeply rooted in us. that old saying about our hearts were made for you, O Lord, and we won't rest until we rest in you is another expression. There's a knowingness that we're meant to ascend. And we may be lost about it. We may be confused about it. But the light is always available. The light is always coming down, whether we're at the level of moon or earth, world 24, it's always available. And so this seeing of the ray of creation transformed for me the whole idea from just an idea of some numbers and some planets and some different things to really feeling it within myself in an actual way. And then also seeing that even though this esoteric teaching comes from centuries and centuries and centuries ago, the correspondence with each level of materiality and each level of consciousness, unbelievably accurate, just so much correspondence. So I'll pause there for any questions or comments. Victoria, please.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is beautifully expressed the way you've done this, and I totally track with it. And I also wonder about the mystery beyond it, because truly, if we don't perceive as humans even 10% of what's able to be perceived, I mean, even on a simplistic level, we don't smell as well as a dog does. Mm-hmm. We don't see as well at night as an owl does. I mean, and that's simplistic. I have this knowingness, if you will, that there's more than even this. I mean, that we're seeing just like elementary school stuff. You know, my husband's terminally ill. He's been had cancer for a while, 9 years actually now. And he's done a lot of research. He's got a doctorate, and he doesn't call himself a doctor, but he's really into the research. And one of the things that's been so interesting is, and this is very common in the Eastern world, but not so common in the commonly known in the Western world, is children before the age of five remember their life before they died. I mean, before they were born, they died, and then they were born again. And there's actually a university in Virginia that actually has a whole department on this and more. And they show these little children before five, and they remember such details that this, if they remember their former mother or their father and their house and everything, the researcher will take pictures of women and say, "Do you see your mother?" And they show this documentary, and the child will guess 100% Irie. And there's no way a 3-year-old or 4-year-old. And so all of that just kind of makes me excited that beyond our intellect, you know, where we're sitting here drawing diagrams and we're trying with our brains to go, well, here's our hierarchy, and this is how we think as humans. If you study life after death, there's no past, present, or future, but we live in linear time. And so we think in hierarchical terms, we think one right after another. But, you know, my heart and soul says there's even more than that, you know? Mm-hmm. So thank you for my weird talk. But I mean, I don't know how to say it. Sometimes there's no words.
No, there's no words. And that's not weird at all. Yeah, I think if I remember, it was 0.3% of all light waves are what we can perceive. It's so tiny that if you put the light we can perceive was just a little 1 millimeter ink dot on a pie plate, the pie plate would need to be, I think it was 80 feet in diameter to capture what we don't see, you know. So it's ridiculous how we we somehow have an idea that we're not only the center, but we kind of know everything. And that's, yeah, it's really, really great to have a teaching like this that could just crack open that certainty and get us out of the head and into this space, which is that where the inner light can radiate. Bob.
I wanted to ask if it would be possible to have a printed copy of what you just shared with us. I would love to study this some more. I mean, I'm going back and listen to the recording again, but my goodness, this is very helpful to me.
Thank you for asking. Yeah, in fact, I do have other slides. I'm not showing them because I wanted to just tell the story, but they'll be posted. So there's about 5 slides that go through these different levels and summarize exactly what I was just saying. So,
okay, thank you.
Sure. Yeah, one of the other things too is that I was intrigued by all that was said about World 48, you know, our normal home, because the work says we're asleep. All of level 48, it's all asleep. And that kind of had me scratching my head a little bit, because you look at the technology that we're using right now, just look, I've got this headset, it's Bluetooth through this computer, WebEx, I mean, Zoom. This whole conversation wouldn't even be possible if it weren't for our technology, which we've developed through reason. But that's still sleep in the work, because that's simply not all there is. And I think of seeing you do not see, hearing you do not hear. It's not bad. There's a lot of good stuff here at World 48, but it's just not the end of the journey. It's not the end of our evolution. And there's something in us that knows that and is called to something higher. So it's really nice to know that the world of the brain is not the whole thing, the whole story. Camille, please.
Hi, Brian. I would just like for you to put that slide up one more time, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I just need to see it again.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Mimi.
What I, we had in the Tarot, there's a couple of the arcanum that represent a double respiration. And, you know, as we see the beauty of the ascending, what's written into, I believe, most of the ray from the very lowest is evolution. Mm-hmm. And Ilya said, we are arrows of the evolutionary process, okay? And when we see ourselves in the picture of the Lanakia, right there on the edge, the what I would say is the evolutionary edge.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are talking about all these laws, but written into it upwards and downwards is evolution. And what makes us so lucky in this way is that we're work students, and evolution is spoken of from the very beginning of our introduction to this work. The possibility it's what it was at first. So now I know that, and I'm seeing myself on the edge
of Mauna Kea. And oh my God. So I'm insignificant, but I matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, yeah. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Brian. This is so much fun.
Thank you, Mimi. It is fun. That reminds me too, that I was thinking about, so this light and the capacity to receive it and to reflect it. There's so much about that evolution that is about us seeing the light in the rest of creation, seeing it up the ray, seeing it down the ray, seeing the moon, not as a dead rock, but as something that's also rising, something that wants to rise. And so the idea of feeding the moon no longer sounds bad. I mean, I don't really care to do it. It doesn't sound bad. I mean, the moon has to eat also, you know? And as we see and bring light to the matter, it's transforming it. It's evolving it too. The whole thing wants to move up, and we're agents in that. And that just feels really beautiful. It's like you say, not the center of the universe, but right at the edge. Every moment is a moment to bring light to whoever we're talking to, whatever we're looking at, any ordinary activity, we have that possibility. And it serves a purpose. Anyone else like to share?
Bonnie has her hand up, Brian.
Oh, okay. I can't see it. Thank you. Yeah. Bonnie, please.
Hi, thank you. I was looking at the email, and as you were talking about, and the earlier speakers were talking about evolution, it just struck me, the phrase in the email, that we are created to evolve into a new future, and the choices that we make in love and for love co-create our future. And that really struck me as beautiful, because was mentioned earlier, the hands are connecting and we must move forward, but we do it in love, and the evolutionary process will continue. That's why I got that. Thank you for your presentation.
Yes, thank you. And also to that point, it's being in this environment together, even though we're only here virtually, we're holding hands through this whole idea together. I mean, we're elevating each other, and that's an important part of it too. There was a question in the chat about why is all worlds three and not one? And it has to do with that materiality and even consciousness comes from somewhere. It comes from that infinite and unknowable, whatever God really is, way beyond what we can ever perceive. And so material creation isn't the end of it, and consciousness itself isn't even the end of it. The work is saying God is beyond all of that. And that, to me, leaves a feeling of just infinite unknowability, infinite humility, infinite openness, and receptivity to wonder, and not the certainty of my opinions, my beliefs, just to always be open, that no matter how much we think we see, there's more and more beyond. Mary Leah, please.
Thank you, Brian, for recasting the ray of evolution. It was wonderful. Nice take. If you have time, would you say a little bit about the Mifa interval and how you would apply that to your story and your wonderful cast of characters?
Well, I deliberately left that out because I think that's the next topic. This is setting it up. But yeah, it's so just briefly that the sun is, which is energizing and vivifying organic life. Organic life wouldn't be here without the sun. It's, as we were talking about last week, organic life is our cosmos. So we're the cutting edge of that. We have a special purpose that serves the sun, is what the work is saying. And it's to bridge that interval. It's we do it by bringing the light where it currently cannot go. So we're the light bringers, the lucky light workers, as Deborah says. It's that bringing the light to the darkness, bringing the light to the inanimate objects, to the people who are lost, who are caught in negativity and fear and doubt. That healing energy isn't just to transform life here. It's actually serving a purpose. It's sending finer vibrations further up and further down the ray. So it's taking the light that we're receiving and sending it on, transforming impressions, bringing things further and further up the ray, starting with ourselves, you know, starting with the negative emotions that we're experiencing, to bring light to them in the way that Jesus describes, you know, not to cast anything out or get rid of any parts or improve any parts, just to bring them all into the gatefold, lovingly bring it all together and just see it. That act is bringing more light to the darkness. So it's not just a useful function for us, you know, it's got a cosmic purpose. Steve, one more question and then we'll close.
Yeah, this might be a good closing thought. Am I unmuted? Okay. That might be an interesting closing thought. I've been thinking about this, that the universe is ever expanding. And that is really equivalent to the kenotic generosity of God. This expansive, ongoing, there's no border to it. It continues to expand. And the counterweight to that is the gravity of the creation and a desire for unity. So we have super clusters. We cluster. Creation is drawn to the highest forms of itself to cluster. And then that's how these dendrites form in the cosmos. And things don't collapse on themselves and things don't run away from each other. There's this balance of our creation's desire for unity and God's eminent generosity. So thank you.
Exactly. It's interesting that the more unity there is, these more complex structures, the more freedom. We tend to think of it as the opposite. I don't want to join something bigger than me. That I want my freedom. Freedom truly is in those larger structures. Well, thank you, everyone. What a great evening.
Thank you, Brian. What a blessing. What a blessing. How enlivening. I think I'll have a very hard time going to sleep this evening, but could go out and look at the moon, which is also very beautiful now. So a closing word from our friend Rodney Collin. Love is not voluntary. It is a grace. He who has received the grace to pray has received no small mercy from God. We should pray for the grace to love God. To invoke the name of God directly from the heart is to put ourselves directly in contact with God. May it be soon that we live with the name of God always in our hearts. So let us join together in praying aloud wherever we are, the prayer of God's love. that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.